told you about the giant salamanders that we will be moving into the Honolulu Zoo later this year. And of course, we showed you the eel and the bear cat of the Panaeva Zoo on Hawaii Island. And that kind of led us to today's viewer question of the day. We wanted to know, what is your spirit animal and why? What animal do you think best describes you or represents you? It's time to hear what some of you have to say for today's Hawaiian Telcom Tech Chat.
Yeah, and mahalo to everybody being part of our Living 808 TV Facebook account. Go ahead and click the like there. Kind of new. Arnell says, spirit animal, I think mine would be a panda because I love to eat and sleep. I can understand that. This was kind of cool, though. Deborah said, aloha, my tattoo is a manta ray. Pastimes experience meant having the ability to be out there with one's own thoughts and beginning anew in different spaces or times. So that's kind of deep right there. I really enjoy that. Let me scroll up to a few more pictures that had just come in. What do we have right there, Trudy?
Let's see. Rosalind says, this is my spirit animal, dog. Her name is Honey Girl. She's loving, watches our home, protects me if I'm home alone at night. She protects everyone in our home. And
Is it my husband or something? Yeah, I think so.
Mine's is a dog, good-mannered, watchful, loving, and always ready for anything coming my way. And the treats are a must.
Yes, that's right. Kind of cool right here. More so, you were saying you went online, right, and you took a quiz?
Yes.
Well, it looks like Micah did the same thing. What did Micah find out?
Let's see, Trini, I took a quiz online, too, and it said my spirit animal was a deer.
Nice. Yeah. That's kind of cool. And Sierra said my spirit animal would be my dog because he loves me so, so much. And Daniel just kind of put this in, and if you can't tell, it's two dragons in the yin and the yang and the Tao Te Ching. Daniel said it may or not be real, but I've always had an affinity towards dragons.
You unlock this door with the key of imagination. Beyond it is another dimension. A dimension of sound, a dimension of sight, a dimension of mind. You're moving into a land of both shadow and substance, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into
the Thanksgiving travel crush is on.
People everywhere bumping into you, stepping on you.
Some reassurance for pregnant women.
Moderate consumption of caffeine is unlikely to be associated with the risk of a miscarriage.
A turkey named Harry is spared the cleaver.
Harry, you got your pardon. Ladies and gentlemen, happy Thanksgiving.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition. I'm Bill Whitney. President Harry Truman started the tradition of sparing at least one turkey from the Thanksgiving table. President Clinton continued that tradition today when a bird named Harry was brought to the White House.
Before I feast on one of the 45 million turkeys who will make the ultimate sacrifice, let me give this one a permanent reprieve.
President Obama announced he will address the nation tomorrow night to explain his official decision to grant a Thanksgiving Day pardon to Cranberry, the official bird chosen for the National Thanksgiving Turkey Presentation. The two-hour speech entitled The Obligation of the Just will lay out President Obama's 35-point argument for keeping the turkey alive, citing historical precedent and over 2,000 statistics about turkeys. The president considered all potential points of view before deciding to spare the turkey's life.
This is no rubber-stamp turkey pardon. The president did not bend to political pressure when making this decision. He knew that no less than a turkey's life hangs in the balance.
The president labored for the last 6 months over whether to spare Cranberry, enlisting 55 staffers to investigate its personal background by visiting farms and interviewing those close to the turkey. Joining us now from Washington is Jane Carmichael. Welcome, Jane.
Hi, Andrea.
Now, Jane, the White House has released the president's notes pertaining to the pardon, including his personal decision-making flowchart, right?
Yes, really, he wanted to be confident he was making the right choice.
Understandable.
He even spent 4 hours one-on-one with Cranberry to assess its moral character.
Now, the White House says President Obama also reached out to Republicans, but I'm hearing they were unwilling to collaborate.
That's exactly right. He invited both parties to a conference at the White House, but the talks broke down around hour six when a frustrated Mitch McConnell said, oh my God, just do whatever, and left the room.
Now, Jane, looking at tomorrow's schedule, we understand that he has canceled the public ceremony.
Yeah, he absolutely has, Andrea.
Really?
President Obama felt that a festive atmosphere featuring songs and a Thanksgiving pageant performed by the Girl Scouts did not fit the solemn import of the event, in which, quote, the scales of justice will be once again checked to ensure the rights of all turkeys.
was real efficient on the way over here. I was real pleased at how I got over here. I was able to kill two birds with one stone. Baby birds. Cinder block. Real ugly scene.
Now, you can rent a car,
yep.
You can rent a movie, rent a home, but have you ever heard of renting a chicken?
Never, but that is right. A way to have farm-fresh eggs at your home without the commitment. Homestead Jen and Homestead Greg are both here to explain more of this to us. Thank you both so much for joining
us. You're welcome.
Our pleasure.
So let's just say what's the obvious question. We're renting chickens?
Yes, absolutely. Farm-fresh eggs without the commitment. So we provide the coop, either two or four chickens, depending on the package. We provide the feed, delivery within 50 miles of Marana. So, of course, that includes Tucson. And full support. We provide a book. And we are available for questions before, during, and after the rental.
Wow. This is so interesting to me. My fiance's actually been talking about wanting to have a chicken coop in our backyard.
Fantastic.
And I'm like, okay, those are smelly and like loud, and I'm worried that there'd be sounds like right when dawn comes. I know that I'm wrong
yeah,
about everything.
Right.
So set all of our viewers straight.
Right. So there's a chicken. There's
right
two chickens
there.
Right here. Yeah, they're hanging out.
You wouldn't even notice them.
Right. So they sometimes do cause some noise when they're laying an egg. But aside from that, they are hens. Roosters are the ones who give the hens a very bad name. So the hens are rather quiet, less noisy than most neighbor dogs.
Wow. Yes. And I'm sure our neighbors will appreciate that. And now I know we have two here, but how many do people normally rent at a time?
Either two or four. So this is a complete setup that we can provide. Yeah, and the coop is portable. So you talked about maybe smell, right? So the coop is portable. The droppings then are not piling up because the coop moves, and then the droppings can just be scraped up right off the ground.
Okay, so much easier than I was anticipating.
Oh, for sure.
I have to admit. And I love that you brought some little chicks with you because they're so cute. Now, why wouldn't people just want to get the chicks and raise them? You know,
that's a great question. From this age, they're about a week and a half old, it takes 4 to 6 months for a chicken to lay their first egg. And if someone buys baby chicks, it's possible that the chicken will never lay an egg because it's a rooster.
That would be a problem.
Yes, and you don't need a rooster to have farm fresh eggs out of a hen.
Okay, so this is basically, we're already getting the product portion of it. You guys have already brought them up. You know they're ready to make eggs.
Yes.
So when we're ready to, I want to get the eggs. I want, what are the reason I rented the chickens for. How many eggs can I expect, let's say, in a week?
In a week, you should expect from two hens about a dozen eggs, give
about
or take.
A dozen eggs.
That's
so if we
a good
started,
number.
Yeah, if we started calculating what we spend on eggs and start adding that up, this is going to start paying off really quick.
Certainly.
I love this. So are we allowed to hold one of the chicks?
Yes. So this
is. I'm really excited about this home.
This is from our Hatch the Chicken program. It's a 5-week rental. So you rent the incubator with the fertile eggs. And then after 3 weeks in the incubator, the chicks hatch. You see the little boots
Hello,
on her
honey.
Feet there.
Oh, my goodness.
The chicks hatch, and then you get the brooder cage. You get to keep the baby chicks for 2 weeks just when they start to get a little smelly and not so cute. We pick them up and take them back to the homestead.
I love this that you give this as an option because I know my stepkids would freak out over this. I mean, I'm about to freak out because I'm holding this.
I know.
The cutest little sweetest. So then when you do rent the chickens, how long do people typically rent them for?
About 6 months.
It's 6 months.
Yes, a good solid rental period so they know for sure whether it's something that they would enjoy having full time. And with our rental packages, if our renters chicken out, then we will just pick them up, no questions asked, or adoption at the end of the rental is available as well.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah,
so if
same
you fall in
this.
Love with your chickens,
yes.
You don't necessarily have to give them back. You can give them a good home as well.
Right, exactly.
I love that.
Hello, babies. What do you want to tell mommy today? What do you want to say to mommy?
Oh.
Thank you.
you won't do me no harm. But go ahead. Go ahead. My old aunt, she won't do. She likes it and they eat her too.
Hustle, man. What you
I got something I know you gonna dig. I got a special on some free range chicken.
What the hell is free range chicken, man?
It means for me it was free. For you it's gonna cost you in the range of $15.
Having a dog in the home may improve children's mental health. Researchers surveyed the parents of more than 600 kids between the ages of 4 and 10 about their kids' physical and mental health. Among the children with pet dogs, only 12% tested positive on a questionnaire for anxiety. Among the kids without dogs, that number jumped to 21%. The researchers say a bigger study will be needed to see if the benefit actually holds true.
Ah! people just can't wait to open their Christmas presents. And that apparently was the case with a short and very fast thief who went to a store in Murray, grabbed a present, and made a clean getaway, all on fours.
Did we mention this took place on the pet aisle? John Hollenhorst has the story of a very canine Christmas caper.
At Smith's Food and Drug in Murray, a popular place these days, is the manager's office, where they have the surveillance video.
You had to see to believe it, but it happened, so it's crazy.
A suspicious character entered through the front door.
No, I've never seen him shopping before. Brand new customer, didn't even have his fresh value card.
What happened next is already becoming legend.
How likely is that for a dog to walk into a store, go down a pet aisle, get his bone, and walk out?
Let's reconstruct the crime a step at a time. Entering at the checkout area, he approached a young girl.
He just kind of sniffed the customer up, and then he headed down the aisle.
At that point, he had a decision to make. Left, no dog food. Right, dog food. He turned right and went straight to aisle 16.
The dog food aisle. He knew where he was headed.
There are so many fun Christmas presents he could have picked. I mean, look at this. This one even lights up. But he seemed to know exactly what he was after.
He grabbed a rawhide bone like this and headed down the aisle, only to be confronted by the manager.
I looked at him. I said, drop it. I decided I wanted to keep all my fingers, so I didn't try to take it from him. And he looked at me, and I looked at him, and he ran for the door, and away he went. Right out the front door.
Look at that dog go.
Expert Marshall Tanner says the culprit's sense of smell is 100,000 times better than the typical crook.
Smelled the rawhide bone, grabbed it, and walked out of the store, thereby being a shoplifting dog.
At last word, he was still at large, presumably enjoying his Christmas gift.
He's enjoying the heck out of it.
I won't cry.
Returning to the scene of the crime in a Hummer, Akira took it easy, this time riding instead of walking.
Akira! Come here, baby.
The 11-year-old Siberian Husky seemed eager for a return visit to the grocery store. Just before Christmas, surveillance video captured a mysterious dog making a clean getaway with a stolen rawhide bone. The Sterling family suspected Akira was the bad guy and brought her back to face the music.
Oh yeah, there's no question. That looks exactly like the dog.
The verdict was unanimous from store employees.
Yes, that's the dog.
Yes, that's the dog. Yeah, that's my dog.
When they turned her loose, she followed her nose straight for the good stuff. After sniffing around a bit, the first aisle she explored was aisle 16, the pet aisle, paying particular attention to the rawhide bones.
What do you think? Are you proud or are you feeling guilty?
Yeah, a little bit of both, definitely.
Akira lives here, a long way away. An electronic fence line is supposed to give her collar a jolt if she tries to leave, when it works.
She's a roamer. She likes to get out and roam, and nothing will keep her inside.
Here's the Walt Disney Incredible Journey part. To get to the Smith store in Murray, she must have walked from Cottonwood Heights, crossing under two freeways, 5.9 miles. After ripping off the bone, a round trip of nearly 12 miles.
That's a hungry dog.
You aren't feeding her at home?
Yeah, we're definitely feeding her. She has boxes of treats in the cupboards.
Dogs are still outlawed in the store, so Akira has to leave. As for the shoplifting charge, well,
we usually handcuff them, but we only have one set of handcuffs, so.
This time around, Akira stopped at the cash register. Her family paid twice. Once for a fresh bone, and once more for the one that got away.
Just don't let me see you shoot no dogs.
Hey, I got shots fired here. Send me another unit.
The profile of a typical American gun owner is this. Over 30, white, male, middle class.
And in Rapid City, South Dakota, a West Highland Terrier has been barking continuously for six straight years today. The small dog, named Taffy, was purchased by area electrician David Richards as a present for his daughter's eighth birthday.
Billy just turned 14, so that would be 6 years. Yeah. She barked the whole first week, and then that turned into a few months, and she's still barking. She's super family pet.
Neighbors confirm the dog's excitable nature.
She talks all the time. She's got a lot. She barks, barks, barks.
David Richards said the family has never considered giving the dog away.
I mean, we couldn't. You know, Brittany would put a big stink. I mean, in the end, Taffy is, she is...
I'd like to kill it.
This marks the longest time a dog has barked continuously in Rapid City history, surpassing the previous record of 8 minutes.
Good boy.
Killing a buffalo is a risky business. But these wolves have hunted buffalo for hundreds, if not thousands of years. They know what they need to do. The wolves have to attack from behind, so they must get the herd to run. The buffalo know that if they stand and face the wolves, they have the advantage. Sometimes these standoffs can last for days. If the buffalo's strategy was foolproof, there wouldn't be any wolves. But eventually, the buffalo lose their nerve and decide to run for it. I can see how the wolves are testing the buffalo, looking for a young animal or one that is struggling. During the winter, the buffalo have to break trail, running through the deep snow. they tire more quickly than the wolves. Scattering through the bush forces the wolves to split up and reduces their effectiveness. But the big alpha male is not distracted. He's got a lock on his prey. It's a yearling calf. The big male is such a huge wolf, he's able to bring this 600-pound animal to a stop all by himself. But the herd scattering through the bush has led one of the younger wolves into his own solo battle. He tries to grab the buffalo by the front and pays the price for this mistake.
Now it's like college.
Yeah. All right, I want to talk about something.
All right.
I'd like to say something that I've prepared tonight.
All right, Alan.
Hello. How about that ride in? I guess that's why they call it Sin City. You guys might not know this, but I consider myself a bit of a loner. I tend to think of myself as a one-man wolf pack. But when my sister brought Doug home, I knew he was one of my own. And my wolf pack, it grew by one. So were there two of us, there were two of us in the wolf pack. I was alone first in the pack, and then Doug joined in later. And 6 months ago, when Doug introduced me to you guys, I thought, wait a second, could it be? And now I know for sure, I just added two more guys to my wolf pack.
All right.
Four of us wolves running around the desert together in Las Vegas, looking for strippers and cocaine.
Our tale begins on what was supposed to be an abandoned highway at Yellowstone National Park. That's when Alex Y. Pazinski heard a thundering noise.
I thought it was a horse and carriage. That was the kind of noise that I heard.
When he looked back in his rearview mirror, he saw two brown blurs he thought were moose running straight for him. So Y. Pazinski pulled over and grabbed his camera, ready to shoot. But what he saw next blew him away.
I thought I was having a hallucination or something. I couldn't believe what that buffalo looked like.
One brown blur turned out to be an injured bison, badly burned from one of the many hot spots in Yellowstone. And if that wasn't rare enough, the other brown blur was a grizzly bear, trying to get his jaws around an already cooked meal. You would think why Pazinski would get out of the way, but he stood by and snapped 14 hair-raising pictures.
I stood in front of the car as long as I thought it was safe.
But the story doesn't end with the photos. Why Pazinski says as soon as the two beasts found themselves in the woods, the grizzly decided the hunt was not worth the effort. The bison lived one more day before park rangers found it and put it down due to its burn wounds. A story that chalks up to just another day in Yellowstone National Park.
This is one brave Billy. A goat, intended to be lunch for a tiger at a Russian zoo, has survived against all odds by becoming the big cat's friend. Staff at a Russian safari park were stunned when the unlikely bond formed between Amur the tiger and his intended meal that zookeepers have named Timur, meaning iron, because of his bravery. The Siberian tiger even had to sleep outside his hut as the cheeky goat stole his new friend's bed. This footage shows the goat following the tiger around the enclosure, even trotting after him when he gets left behind. Wherever Amur goes, so does Timur. Keepers said the tiger is quite lazy by nature, so hasn't gone to the trouble of hunting the goat. Let's just hope he doesn't get hungry.
Smile today, I'm not gonna lie. You're out living it up today. I've got dues to pay, and the grave digger puts on the forceps. The stone mason does all the work. The barber can give you a haircut. The carpenter can take you out to lunch. Now, but I just want to play on my panpipes. I just want to drink me some wine. As soon as you're born, you start dying. So you might as well have a good time. Oh, no. Sheep go to heaven. Goats go to hell. Sheep go to heaven. Goats go to hell. Sunset Strip, I don't wanna feel the emptiness. Old marquees with stupid band names. I don't wanna go to Sunset Strip. I don't wanna go to Sunset Strip. I don't wanna feel the emptiness. Old marquees with stupid band names. I don't wanna go to Sunset Strip. The stone mason does all the work. The barber can give you a haircut. The carpenter can take you out to lunch. Now, but I just want to play on my panpipes. I just want to drink me some wine. As soon as you're born, you start dying. Go to hell.
go to hell.
An important scientific breakthrough at Colorado's Outlook Institute this week. For the first time ever, a sheep has been genetically engineered with the brain of a goat. Joining us now to talk about the incredible breakthrough is the experiment's director, Dr. Doug Erskine. This is quite an accomplishment for you and your team.
Thank you. We're very excited.
Now, you've been working on this project for over 3 years, is that correct?
Yes, but we've accomplished an incredible feat. We now have a sheep that has the habits, preferences, and mannerisms of an entirely different animal, a goat.
So having a goat's brain really had an impact on her behavior.
Absolutely. Look how she selects that grass. That's very unsheep-like chewing.
Incredible.
You see how she looked at that fence post? Hmm. That's exactly how a goat would have looked at that post.
What was the journey like getting you and your team to this point?
Well, we started out, we were trying to cure Alzheimer's. But now we have a sheep with the mind of a goat.
Oh, now this is interesting. What exactly is your goat sheep doing here?
Oh, no. That's a regular sheep. Here. This is the one.
Doctor, let me ask you this. What are the ethical implications of this technology?
Well, you never know where the science will lead you. Our first major breakthrough was breeding a squirrel with the mind of a chipmunk. And from there we said, well, we can't stop here.
Well, thankfully you didn't.
The blood of Jesus cleanses. I saw that up on a Tide really does better. I don't think washing it in blood will help your thing out at all.
That's a good point.
Yeah, man. Feel like this too. You ever try to wash your whites in blood of the lamb? Get them cooking up.
One man has taken plastic surgery to the extreme and transformed his entire face to look like a reptile's. What would possess someone to do this, but not go even further? What's in the head of someone who goes full-on lizard from the neck up, but leaves the remaining 90% of his body pretty much untouched? We sent Justin Perez to Memphis, Tennessee to find out.
They call him the human lizard. If you saw Brian Lindstrom walking down the street, you might be shocked. Green, scaly face, dark green eyes, but no 3-foot tail, not a single spine sticking out of his back, not one.
So you've got the bifurcated tongue, tubercular scale pattern, so on.
That's right.
So I guess the obvious question is, why? You know, why'd you go so far and stop before you got to the really rad shit?
This is who I really am.
Yeah, but no long claws, no pointy spikes that come out above the nose. I mean, you could see why it's hard for an outsider to understand why you deliberately go under the knife to only become half the sick, scaly-ass monster you could be.
But I have my bifurcated tongue. I'm pretty happy with that.
Holy shit. But that could be so much longer.
Most of Brian's modifications were performed here by Dr. Michael Hiller.
So Brian comes in, tells you what he wants, maybe shows you some photos, and you don't even stop to think and say, whoa, hold on a second, I don't think I can do this. And maybe instead, we turn your entire body into a lizard body.
In my practice, I generally focus on giving my clients exactly what they ask for.
So this leads me to believe you didn't even tell him about the type of lizard that has flaps on the side of his head that fan out, and how fucking sick that would look?
No.
You know what I'm talking about? Like the kind of like, whew.
Spending the day with Brian, we got strange looks everywhere we went. People probably wondering, who the hell is that? Why didn't he get his eye sockets moved to the side of his head like a real iguana?
So do people judge you for being way more human than you are a lizard? And for not augmenting your tear ducts so they can shoot blood out of your eyes? You know, like the Malacartis?
You know, I let people think what they want.
Yeah, but I mean, if you could do it over again, would you go all the way this time?
Maybe a guy like Brian challenges us to look beyond the surface. After all, maybe he does actually have a lizard's tail, and it just broke off, like on a real lizard. Maybe it's growing back right now and regenerating as we speak. Maybe Brian is a real lizard man if we just gave him the chance.
there's still those people out there that think, you know, Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney are actually lizards who eat human flesh. I don't know if anybody's ever asked you directly, sir, but are you a lizard?
I don't think.
Are you actually? Can you just please give that a straight answer? Let him answer. Are you a lizard?
Here's the short answer. Yeah. I'm in New York City. I walk down the street. People walk up, shake hands, stop me. They want an autograph. Want to get a photograph with me. Go to eat last night at dinner, and Joyce and I were sitting there in the little Italian restaurant. and a man came up and said he'd like to buy my dinner. And I
yeah.
And it turns out I paid for my dinner. The next thing I know, the waiter comes back and said the man insisted to pay for your dinner. And here's your canceled receipt for me.
Oh, wow. That's
See,
nice.
There's plenty of people that...
you didn't answer the question. What would be hurt by denying that you're a lizard?
I did not just arrive in town falling off a turnip.
But no, that's fascinating to me. What would be hurt by denying... And I'm not going to ask you to deny it now. I'm more interested in what would be hurt if you denied that you're a lizard.
Yeah. Sorry I brought it up. I apologize.
But that is fascinating to me that saying I am not a lizard might be dangerous. I want to know how it might hurt... Wait, how would it hurt your credibility?
Well, I saw the thing coming out of the sky. It had a one long horn and one big eye. I commenced a chicken and I said, ooh-wee. It looked like a purple people eater to me. It was a one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater. One-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater. A one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater. Sure looked strange to me. Well, then he came down to earth and he lit in a tree. I said, Mr. Purple People Eater, don't eat me. I heard him say in a voice so gruff,
I wouldn't eat you cause you ain't so tough.
It was a one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater. One-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater. One-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater. Sure looked strange to me. I said, Mr. Purple People Eater, what's your line? He said, it's eating purple people, and that sure is fine. But that's not the reason that I came to land.
I wanted to get a job in a rock and roll band.
Yeah, that was old rock and roll, flying purple people eater, pigeon toed undergrowth, flying purple people eater. Friendly little people eater, oh, what a sight to see. And then he swung from the tree and he lit on the ground. He started to rock, really rocking around. A crazy ditty with a swing tune singing.
A pop, pop, a boost, a lot, a loom, bam, boom.
We'll make it all rock and roll, flying purple people. Stick, 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 stone, and they grow, flying purple people.
Ow, ow, quack, quack.
Friendly little people eater, oh, what a sight to see. And then he went on his way, and then what do you know? I saw him last night on the Star Out show. He was blowing it out, really knocking him dead, playing rock and roll music through the horn in his head.
Oh! Oh! Sounds like suicide.
You know, there's mysterious creatures being found all over the world every day. But just recently, this monstrous-looking mutant was discovered underneath the Brooklyn Bridge in New York City. It was found by Denise Ginley.
At first, I thought it was like some sort of horrible, like, bloated carcass of a dead dog that had fallen in the river. But then as we got closer, it was like, those aren't really dog paws. So we decided to climb over the fence to take better pictures.
Denise posted her pictures on the internet, and as you might guess, everybody had their own opinion about what it was. The New York Parks Department determined it was a pig that had become bloated after being in the river. But the only problem with that is that pigs don't have five fingers, which the photograph clearly shows. Denise herself said she thought it was a big rat, but other people disagreed. Some thought it was a small raccoon. Others thought it was a deformed seal. And then there was the guy who said he thought it was a girl he once saw at Walmart. To this day, nobody's been able to prove exactly what this animal is. But one writer did point out that the monster was found in a place that has a direct water route to nearby Plum Island. That's where the U.S. government has a secretive center where they say they are testing for animal diseases. But what really goes on there, nobody can say for sure.
I think Bigfoot is blurry. That's the problem. It's not the photographer's fault. Bigfoot is blurry. And that's extra scary to me because there's a large out-of-focus monster roaming the countryside.
Very powerful stuff. What more do you want?
Today, we are going to ask a question. Why don't any animals have wheels? I mean, animals use a plethora of complicated locomotive techniques, slithering, fins, legs, wings, but yet no animal has wheels. What's really paradoxical about this question is that us humans seem pretty technologically advanced. We've mastered the wheel, but we have yet to design something that fully takes advantage of the limb, which is why this contraption seems so eerie. It may be the closest we have come to mimicking what nature is already quite natural with. Of course, nature, the source of these miraculous limbs that we have yet to adequately reproduce, doesn't use wheels. The wheel gives a mechanical advantage to the user, allowing them to move heavy things more easily. But if the wheel is so simple and seems like such a no-brainer, why don't any animals have them? Well, to be sure, let's take a look at the wheel spider. When escaping from a predator, this spider will turn its body into what is essentially a tire rolling downhill. And who can forget tumbleweeds? These things roll around in the wind, spreading seeds everywhere. An even crappier example is the dung beetle, who takes pieces of poop and turns them into rollable balls that can be easily moved. But those are examples of rolling, not wheels as we are looking for them today. Wheels on axles, something that's a part of a whole, but yet exists independently of it and can spin indefinitely in one direction without having to wind itself back again. Bacterial flagella actually operate in this manner, but we don't see it in any larger life form. Which brings us to the first problem of finding wheels on animals. How can a living wheel be completely separate from the animal and still receive nutrients and expel waste? Or, if that wheel was made out of a dead material the animal produced, like fingernails or hair, how would it build into the shape of a wheel while maintaining separation from the host? For that matter, how does developing a wheel on your body help you along the way? I mean, look at a giraffe. Having a neck that's just a little bit longer still means that you'll be able to reach food that's a bit higher, you'll have more food, will live longer, and will have more babies, making longer necks more common. But if your mutation is a wheel that's only a little bit round, it doesn't provide the same benefit. It doesn't equal you making more babies. And as much as I hate to admit it, the wheel may be a bit overrated. Think of it this way. In order for a wheel to be useful for movement, it sort of requires a prior invention. Roads. Without a smooth surface to roll on, like a road or rails, the wheel falls short, and wings and fins and limbs do a better job for the terrain found on Earth. Even when humans knew about the wheel, they had little use for it across rough terrain or muddy, debris-ridden streets, which is why wealthy people in the past simply got carried around in litter. No, not rubbish, a litter, a vehicle that uses no wheels and is carried by people or animals. Fancy rich people would get carried around in chair sedans, but another type of litter was simply a sling made out of fabric that would help you carry, say, wounded soldiers across the terrain of a battlefield. The modern-day stretcher is an example of a litter. Okay, so in order for the wheels on your body to be useful, you have to build roads. So what gives, animals? Why didn't you ever build roads? I mean, you guys are capable of some pretty awesome things. Complicated burrows, nests, dams. Why didn't you ever build roads? Well, this question is fundamental to Richard Dawkins' analysis of the wheeled animal problem. He says that the problem with roads is that they're not selfish enough. A nest, a burrow, a dam, these are things that you can defend, that you can build and then only use for your own benefit. Because hey, you were smart enough and industrious enough to build it. But roads can be used by anything that stumbles upon it. I mean, you lost energy and resources to build that road, while a moocher can just come up and use it anyway and have time left to make a bunch of babies and prosper. So the road is a really cool example of how humans got benefits from breaking the mold and doing things not just for themselves, but for everyone. In fact, of all the animals, only humans have ever invented taxes, money that we force others to pay to build services that they might not even use. So the next time you see a wheel, say, "Thanks, wheel." You're a great symbol of the fact that humans can cooperate and be unselfish.
Now, go find the others. .com.
I don't want to sound like a queer or nothing, but I think unicorns are kick-ass.